Thanks so much for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So the name of the show is All Roads Lead to Pullman. Mm-hmm. I love our community, and I love that nobody is here by accident. Mm-hmm. Everybody who comes to Pullman did so intentionally and to make something better, mm-hmm. whether it's to get a new degree, start a job, start a company. You know, we all come from somewhere, and or we choose to stay here because we love this community. Mm-hmm. But my understanding is that you're born and raised.
Born and raised. Yes, that's right.
Fantastic. Yep. So then the question isn't what brought you to Pullman. The question is, why did you stay?
Yeah. And why did you come back? Yeah. I mean, what brought me here, my folks coached the women's track and field team back in the late 80s, early 90s.
Cool.
So I was born here, Pullman High School graduate, and then stayed at WSU. And part of that, you know, not a great reason, you know, at the time, it was my girlfriend was here. And, you know, that's how some of the decisions are driven. But also because I ran track for the Cougs. And so I got along with the coaches. They had offered me a great scholarship. And so at the time, that's what kept me here. But then teaching. So I'd always wanted to be a teacher from Mr. Gary Johnson's fifth grade class. But then my now wife, girlfriend at the time, her dad was not doing too well health-wise. She moved out to Vancouver, Washington, finished the degree there. I followed. And then we kind of bounced around the state, and then during that time got married, had our daughter. We were living in Mansfield at the time, teaching in Bridgeport, Washington, as you'd noted, you know, north central Washington. But then we wanted our daughter Aster, she's 10 now, two at the time, wanted to raise her with family, grandparents. I've got three younger brothers, her uncles. And so ultimately it was family and community that brought us back.
I love that. I'd like to think that most people wish they're raising their family in Pullman. They just don't realize it. Mm-hmm. They don't know that this place exists, mm-hmm. which is part of our problem. I love the combination of factors we have here. It's just such a great quality community. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's your elevator pitch for Pullman? If you're trying to tell someone who's never been out here, what do you tell them when you describe your home on the Palouse?
Yeah, I love that. I guess it would be Pullman is a place where you can access the beauty of kind of an untouched world. I shouldn't say untouched. That's not the right way to put it. Wild spaces-ish, like Kamiak Butte. You can head up to Deary. You can go to the Pies. I mean, so one, it's a kind of a great access point. I shouldn't have led with that though, because that's not the most important thing. The most important thing are that Pullman is a safe place. It's a stable place. It's a place with tons of brilliant people. It's a diverse community, relatively speaking, right? Pullman is more diverse than Spokane is ethnically. It's an educated community. People care about learning. Like you said, they come here to better themselves. Growing up here, we always had a great time. So when people tell me Pullman's boring, I don't quite see it.
What are you talking about?
We've always found fun stuff to do. And I guess lastly, I'd say it's also a community that, and this goes maybe back to the safety and stability, is I think we're a pretty mindful community. We're, you know, in some sense, I think about that, even in financial terms, where so I go to like the Pullman Parks and Rec survey they did, and I was very pleased, and I mentioned this in the forum, that folks weren't just asking for a bunch of new things. It's like, let's maintain what we've got and let's kind of align and connect what we've got. So I kind of view Pullman in that way too.
Yeah, no, I agree. Like so many of those points are things that really resonate with me. Like I love that we're in a smart community. Right. I love that I can raise my family in a place where I know so many PhDs and PhD candidates. If I need help with something with school or with anything education, chances are I can find the expert who can help me with it.
Well, indeed. And I think that's something we haven't tapped into especially well as a community, is kind of tapping into those folks who are experts.
Yeah. Tell me more about that.
Yeah. Before I do, I left out two real important things about elevator pitch for Pullman. One, we've got the best sunsets anywhere.
Oh, beautiful.
Hands down. Better than Moscow. No. and two, I lost whatever that was. But so your question was, we're not tapping well.
Yeah, enough. Tell me more about that.
Yeah. So when I was serving on the board of the Palouse Discovery Science Center, we had had this partnership.
Love our science center.
It's amazing. And there's got a great story for there too. Maybe not for this or maybe, but we'll see. And I learned that there's a program at WSU, the Entrepreneurial Faculty Ambassadors, the EFA program. And we had partnered with them at the Paradise Creek Brewery, and we did a thing called Science Pub. And so you'd get a couple professors coming in to speak about their particular area of influence out of a desire to take the knowledge that they had gained in part at the time at WSU and share it with the public, like the land grant, you know, mission of universities, of land grant universities are. And one of my favorites was Jake Eastman, who's you know, studying how we use hydrogen as a fuel source, so just cutting edge, you know, in the world research. And he's doing this co-op presentation with Squeak, who's an art professor, and they're talking about the synergies between hydrogen and Buddhism. It was just like this funky, cool, yeah, just like you'd never expect to hear that in Pullman. And, you know, we'd get maybe 30 people, you know, to attend. And I think that, to me, that was just kind of symbolic of like, oh, we've got this really rich and interesting, you know, group of people who have so much to share, and that I don't think we're tapping into that enough. Yeah. So as far as where we're not, in talking to people, and particularly business owners, I feel like that you see it the most is on certain issues, projects, programs that certain experts in fields aren't being consulted. You know, so we, I'm trying to think of a good specific example here. I don't want to give you too much dead air, so let me if I can come back to it and think.
No problem.
I will, but that's kind of a recurring thing is, hey, it would have been great to be consulted. We weren't.
Sure.
You see, I think, I don't know how many folks you were talking to, like around the downtown project, but that was a thing that business owners would repeat is, hey, you know, our voice wasn't heard.
Yeah.
We weren't consulted on this. At that point, I was serving on the Pullman Community Montessori Board. It was pretty invested in that and wasn't following that story, especially closely, the downtown project. But that was kind of the rumblings that I would hear.
Yeah.
Were those just not, I guess I'm just repeating myself here, but just not feeling listened to, consulted.
Certainly.
The decisions were being made kind of in a bubble.
Yeah. And, you know, it's a double-edged sword. I love that we live in a small community. One of the consequences of that is when you have a bunch of smart people who are used to being experts in their field, mm-hmm. if you don't take their advice, sometimes they get upset. Yeah. And I was fairly involved in the downtown project. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, one of the things I got used to was hearing from people who we absolutely had heard their opinion. Mm-hmm. But when we didn't do what they said, you didn't hear me. And I'm like, hold on. No, we heard you. We're just not doing what you said.
Yes. And there's another, on that same edge of the sword too, you know, that is one of the constant tensions with local governance is, mm-hmm. at one point, it's like, hey, the city should do more to, and this is any city, but I think it's true of Pullman too, should do more to reach out. At the same time, citizens have got to come in. So we need to have both things operating. Yeah. So I guess one of the things
I can't tell you how many people said that I didn't hear about X, Y, and Z, the downtown project. And then I pull up the MailChimp account and it tells me exactly when they opened the email and clicked on the link. And then they're writing a letter saying they weren't informed.
Yeah. Yep. And I think that's where we've got to hold ourselves both as citizen participants and as elected officials accountable.
I love that. That's great. So tell me a little bit about your vision for Pullman.
Yeah. For me, there's a grand vision of, you know, a downtown that's even further beautified. I love going downtown now just based on the outcome of the project. You know, obviously we haven't seen a lot of an influx of new businesses, but just
I'll give you some time. I mean, the traffic is noticeably calmer.
Yeah, and that's a thing where I'm not going to jump on that bandwagon of, hey, it didn't work and nothing's happening yet. It's like, it will get there. I think one of the big barriers there, though, that I keep hearing about and that folks keep coming back to is just rents. Just too high. The number of vacancies mm-hmm. is just weirdly high given the fact that, you know, that one could assume that people want to start businesses, or maybe there's just not a strong entrepreneurial spirit here. I don't know.
There is.
Okay. Yeah. I feel like there should be.
Pullman commercial real estate defies normal supply and demand.
Yes.
Simply because so many people, especially people who have deep roots in the area, have understandably locked up their nest eggs in real estate. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of these properties exist not to cash flow rent, but just to appreciate value.
Right.
And if it sits vacant, no big deal, because you know we don't have a tax structure that incentivizes occupancy.
Right.
Right. You know, other communities might have an occupancy penalty, right? If you have too many vacancies or whatever. We don't have that.
Yeah, and that's something that I'd be interested in pursuing. Mm-hmm. I've heard that sometimes the legality of those is questioned, and a lot of times cities don't, they may put that into place, but then don't collect because they're worried that the folks just aren't gonna pay out.
Yeah. Well, this isn't an excuse, it's just the reality of the situation. If you wait until you need it, it's too late.
Yeah.
Right? It's kind of like if you wait till someone's going to build a wind farm by Kamiak Butte, if you wait till then to do an ordinance about it, you're going to go to court.
Right.
Right. You know, same kind of situation. If we had implemented this 40 years ago, we'd be in a very different situation. But now, not only do we have so many people who would have a legal case for being targeted by such an ordinance, mm-hmm. The very people who would you need the support to pass it are the ones who own that property.
Yeah.
So that makes it a tough sell.
Well, and you bring up, so in that, there's two things that I think you raise some really good points. One, let me work backwards, because the last click in my brain was just talking to people. You know, a story about the aquifer comes to mind where, you know, we've known that we've been mining the aquifer a long time.
Decades.
Yeah. And that there have been previous studies and previous attempts to create more sustainability or to create safeguards, like the building of a reservoir. And this was, I want to say, back in the 80s, you know, we had brought all these engineers on board. They designed this, you know, this great system, and then didn't end up happening because the farmers were furious. Why were they furious? Nobody talked to them. Nobody said, hey, we want to build this on your property. And yet we had, you know, in the design, folks had done that in their geographic, you know, property. So it's like, one, yeah, again, we've got to engage more stakeholders.
Yeah. Well, in that case, I have no inside knowledge of that particular case, mm-hmm. but I do know that oftentimes when you're doing the early design work of a project like that, you have to keep it under wraps because there's eminent domain involved. And if word gets out, you end up in a situation where land changes hands, knowing that the government will have to pay for it. Mm-hmm. And then you get speculators involved.
Yeah. I think that's fair. I think before, like ideally, we should be cutting deals before we get to an eminent domain situation.
Right. Just the planning stage. Just the planning stage of saying we want to put a reservoir out here in Farmer Jim's field. Mm-hmm. Well, if we told him that 10 years in advance.
Yes. Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Be some speculation.
It's a catch-22. Sure, there's no easy way to do it, right? And there's no way that everybody gets everything they want.
Yeah.
And so many of these good ideas end up dying on the floor simply because of a not in my backyard mentality.
Yeah.
Right. At the end of the day, someone said, I don't want a reservoir out my kitchen window. Mm-hmm. And it didn't happen.
Yeah. And that's, I would still like go back to, I think the solution to that is talking to people. I mean, one story that stays in my mind is, went out to West Lafayette years ago. I worked for Schweitzer Engineering Laboratories. I managed a K-12 outreach program. And
awesome.
We had just set up a new, or just built our new facility out there. And our mission was to kind of go out, connect the community, learn about what's going on. And so I met with the superintendent, a guy named Rocky Killian, I think. West Lafayette's a lot like Pullman, you know, highly regarded academically. They had a great music program, great STEM program, and CT, career technical education program. And they were working, I think this was on a new skills center, I believe, in partnership with Lafayette, which was a whole nother awesome story of collaboration that normally these cities can be rivals, but they got together to build this thing. But he said, you know, at first there was some, this outspoken critic, I can't remember if he was a real estate, you know, real estate or a developer or something like that, but it was just like, no, we're not, you know, no to the taxes. No, this is not going to work. But then they started talking to him and getting him involved. And hey, how do you, you know, what, I couldn't tell you the specifics of what they asked him, but as the story went, it was like, yeah, eventually he became our biggest proponent. And I've heard stories like that where I feel like, hey, this is possible. It's like having the communication is possible.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's some folks that just are, you know, going to be hard no. And I think I actually hadn't heard what you'd shared about, I shouldn't say hadn't heard of it, but in talking to people about their theories of like downtown Pullman and Pullman's development, I've heard a lot of different things like, hey, you know, Pullman, we're workaholics, or it's the
guilty.
It's the highway coming through downtown, or it's this or it's that. And all of them have rung true. I hadn't heard what, you know, just the idea of like, this is a nest egg. This is a investment. And so what? Are we talking local people? Are we talking about folks who live
mostly local?
Oh gosh.
Like good people, our friends and neighbors. Like I don't like vilifying landlords, mm-hmm. right? Because a lot of these people are people that you would know and probably have run into at the grocery store. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
It's an interesting supply and demand situation that we're in. You know, you try and get commercial real estate in town, it is crazy expensive in a way that defies all supply and demand, but there also isn't a lot of incentive for landlords to keep spaces occupied. Mm-hmm. And so that, we've kind of painted ourselves into a corner.
Yeah.
It's going to take some creative thinking to get out of that and a highly collaborative spirit. I love what you're sharing about getting out there and communicating. I don't think the communication is the easy button to fixing our community, mm-hmm. but I do think that more communication always beats less communication.
Yeah.
So any candidate who says, I want to engage more with the community, I think is on the right track. Mm-hmm. I love that. So tell me, I'm curious, what prompted you to run? What was like the inciting incident that made you go, you know what, I'm going to throw my hat in the ring?
Yeah. You're not going to like this, but it was the Mike Urban thing. I'll explain.
Please.
That was the straw on the camel's back for me. I'd seen what I considered to be a number of not leadership failures, because I don't want to vilify anybody. Yeah. I've chaired boards, and I know how challenging it can be to be juggling stakeholders, you know, to be working with an executive director or, you know, but you know, WSU, you know, a president who moved away from Pullman,
uh-huh.
You know, who had this great goal of Drive 25, but then, you know, things seem to have gotten worse. That the pandemic happened instead of...
There wasn't a lot of teeth behind the Drive 25.
You know,
it was a logo.
Yeah. Well, yes. And, you know, at the school district with, I'm blanking on...
The whole kerfuffle with
Wendy Kruger. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just that we're losing good people. It's like, hey, come on. The community had come out, and you had folks who are progressively minded, who are conservatively minded, who are progressively minded, coming together saying, hey, this is a good person. We want to keep them.
Yeah.
And could we get creative and find a way to fund that position, you know, stopgap for a time, right? Yeah. Or like, you know,
Now, if you're running for school board, that would be relevant.
Yeah. So let me bring it back. So it was just a string of these like, I don't think that should have happened. Or I wish we would have done something about that. Or I wish we would have listened to people.
Okay.
With the Mike Urban thing, it was, oh man, what happened there?
Yeah.
Most of the community is there. Like, what happened? This side's telling me this. This side's telling me that. I think, and this is me obviously not knowing what was behind the scenes there, but I think at bare minimum, there should be whatever was happening was being worked out. The fact that there was a claimed resignation, and then Mike come out and saying there wasn't a resignation. Yeah. It's like that should not, whatever, however that happened, whatever happened.
And there, since then, there's been a FOIA disclosure that contradicts what Mike said.
Hmm. Was that in the, is that in the Whitten McKinney Gazette article, or?
I don't remember where the source was,
okay.
But I'm not a city attorney, so I want to be careful about what I say.
Sure.
But,
yeah.
I mean, it's a complicated personnel issue.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's I think the trickiest part for governments or even a nonprofit is like,
so that's
the one thing we can't, it's hard to talk about openly. For me, it's like, we need to be more transparent with personnel. Yeah, it can be tough because sometimes you're legally bound not to be transparent. So I do understand that. But that was kind of the thing where I'm like, man, Pullman's taking
hits.
We got
about the Mike Urban situation. You know, Mike is a very sweet man, and I like him a lot. But the most vocal people I've found who have their pitchforks out about his departure were the same people who were asking for Mike's head on a stick 6 months ago mm-hmm. about completely different issues. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just like, I'm tired of hearing people who seem like they're rooting for our city to fail, mm-hmm. right? Like at some point we got to go, all right, can we just get behind coalescing a team and moving forward with this? Yeah. You want to join this team. You want to be an elected official. Mm-hmm. And you brought up the city manager situation that wasn't on my list here.
Yeah.
What do you feel like the role of city council is mm-hmm. in staffing situations?
Yeah, like not much. So that is the mayor's purview. The mayor is the one who's going to build that team. And that's what the city voted the mayor to do.
Yeah.
What I think the city can do is, you know, the city does ultimately approve those positions. And almost what I don't like is when boards or, you know, or council is just rubber stamping what their executive does. So sure, yes, on some level, you need to trust that your staff is the expert, is making the right choice. However, I think it's fair as a representative of the city or a ward to say, hey, you know, I see this person that you picked, but I've got some real questions. And to have, so that's the role I see, is to be that safeguard to say, hey,
yeah.
are we absolutely sure we made the right choice? In this case, that's what the role of a city council person would be. It's just
I like that. That's a division of power, and it's checks and balances. Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense to
yeah.
me. What do you feel like the job of the city council is in general? Like, what's the job description of being a city councilor?
Yeah, the conduit of the people they're elected to represent. How that manifests most importantly is, and this is nothing new, but policy
yeah.
and budget, you know, and you're basically making those big strategic decisions in a concrete way. But I think it also extends beyond that. You know, I think for me, one of the things I'd like to see, to your point, is it's gonna sound funky, but kind of full on culture change, but like, my campaign slogan is believe in Pullman. Like, I mean, that's basically what you just said a minute ago, is like, hey, can we get on the same page? Can we support each other here? And I think that city councilors can do that, that we're leaders, that we're going to be quoted in the paper, that we can coalesce people formally or informally to, you know, serve on committees or just coffee group, you know, coffee checked and drive change that way. I think that, actually, the more you get out of people's way, mm-hmm. The more success we're going to have in solving problems. So you get out of people's way, but support them in solving those problems. And that can be holding kind of your best practices or sharing data or articulating the, you know, you got to see, you've got some issue like the downtown project. Here's the proposed course of action. Here's the pros. Here's the con, or here's kind of, is it not even pros and cons? It's more just trade-offs. You know, here's what we're going to get. Here's what we're going to sacrifice. Pullman, how do you feel about this? Here are the potential implications. I think those are low-hanging fruit in terms of like communication. That way is a low-hanging fruit. Like you said, it's not going to solve the problem, but I think the more we do to communicate
yeah.
and act in a collaborative spirit, that's what Pullman needs now.
I love that. Something I appreciated about your website and your marketing, you know, so many candidates are saying, believe in me. Mm-hmm. And you're saying, believe in Pullman. Mm-hmm. I love that.
Right
I love on. That. On your website, you have a quote that says, I'll work to remove barriers from our change makers and empower those who want to make a positive difference. Mm-hmm. What specific barriers are you hoping to remove?
Yeah, great question. So my brain first goes to business owners. So are there-
I'm one of those.
Yeah. And the ones I've talked to mostly are downtown business owners. I do also just want to put in here that we should not serve downtown and meet and neglect the hills. I think
okay.
honestly, like yes, downtown is a key cultural and symbolic center, but Pullman's got a strong hill culture. We're a dispersed community, you know? So I don't think contrasts to Moscow often are apt. Like we're different in that way. Barriers being things like, I'm just gonna repeat a story. You know, a common thing I hear is inspector comes in, hey, you gotta change this. They make the changes, another inspector from the same department comes in, hey, you gotta change this. wait, did I just change that?
Yeah.
And so that's a thing that's being perceived as a barrier. I've also got a friend who's an inspector. He said, yeah, you know, sometimes you miss stuff. Like, is this something that's just a human thing? So I want to counterbalance that too, but.
I appreciate that counterbalance actually, because I've had a number of people bring up things like inspections, and that is a major point of friction in the community. And I do not feel like it's going well. I would like to see it improve. And the simple fact of the matter is, council holders don't get to tell staff what to do.
Yes.
Right. Staff do not report. The reporting line doesn't go up to city council. And unfortunately, we've had people in those positions who think that being on council gives them the right to walk down the hallway and start telling the staff what to do.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Do inspections better, pay more, you know, waive fines and, you know, that kind of, and it's just, that's just not how it works.
Yeah, and right, that's crossing that governance management line.
So in that situation, how would you address those barriers, since really you're not in a managerial role to tell a department how to run more streamlined? You have to enact it at the policy level.
Yeah, so that's where I would say, like, as a council member asking for information on that, I would say, hey, can we get a report that kind of out, you could do something like, you know, you start giving surveys, feedback forms after interactions, and you say, hey, this is how it went for me, this was good, this was not good, so that we can start to see trends if they emerge, sure. Or not, but that, you know, that's kind of one example. I think another one would be, you know, average like inspection time. So, you know, how long from the time that they had filed or had started that process to the time that they did what they want to do, what do those mean times look like? And call those things to attention, right? I agree that the city council member is not going to be the one to make that change, but we can illuminate the issues. I think that's part of the role too.
Awesome. In a collaborative way.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, because I think if you don't, that if you're missing any key stakeholder, that's a huge blind spot. You know, that's why I brought up the, I don't think you can turn and say, oh, the inspectors need to get their stuff figured out. That's not what I'm saying. And I don't think, well, that may be what some businesses or owners are feeling, but until you talk the inspector to, you do not have a full picture. And I think that's where a lot of the challenges too, for any one city council member to create changes. People, it takes time to talk to folks, takes time to implement change, takes time to, you know, get the ball rolling on some of this stuff. So,
awesome. Well, thank you. Another thing on your website is you say that you want us to host or support local competitions as they help solve longstanding problems. I don't know what that means. What do you mean by local competition? Do you mean that competitions help solve longstanding problems?
Yeah.
Unpack that for me.
Yeah. So two examples stand out in my mind, and one of them is, I think it was the 1984 Olympic Games, Mexico City. And they, you know, there was problems with wayfinding, there was getting around town, and the artist, I don't remember the gentleman's name, but they had a competition for who's, just like they do with, I think probably every Olympics, is who's gonna do the graphics, but it was this comprehensive effort that involved, like, I mean, you're color coding traffic stops and helping people who are coming to the Olympics navigate the city not just doing like graphics for the Olympic Games, but it was this comprehensive effort. And by creating a competition, they had brought in Mexico City's case, brought in the best of the world to kind of harness this identity and spirit of Mexico, but also pulling in, you know, again, these other elements that are helping the city work better.
So
that's what happened.
This one touches a little personal with me. Yeah. I'm hoping you can think of a different example besides graphic design.
Oh.
because as someone who has worked in media for, you know, several decades, I am so over design contests.
Yeah.
So the city of Pullman did a new branding package recently.
Yeah.
They got a new logo. And there's a lot of reasons why it was an upgrade. There's a lot of reasons why people may not like it compared to the old one. Whatever. It's a perpetual thing online where people get in the comments and say, this logo is terrible. Mm-hmm. They should have done a contest instead. Mm-hmm. Give an award of $500. Mm-hmm. And I hate that so much, because what ends up happening is you just have a bunch of people working for free.
Uh-huh.
Right. And then you reward one of that. Like it's a race to the bottom.
Yeah. Okay.
And I think of that. This is just my thing. Contests are a very poor way of crowdsourcing creativity for that kind of thing. Like if you're better to have an RFP with specific criteria than to just ask a bunch of people to submit free work. Yeah, but graphic design may not be the best example. Like what's another example of competitions helping to solve long-standing problems? Because I'm guessing when you think of long-standing problems in Pullman, you're not thinking about the signage.
No, well, no, not, it's one of them. Like I think wayfinding. Yeah,
what's another one?
Yeah, so other than wayfinding.
Other than something that involves graphic design.
Yeah, so another one, I like business competition. So WSU's entrepreneurship program has a business plan competition. Yeah. And there are lots of good ideas that have come from that. I think if that totally. We're going to set up some sort of, I guess I would extrapolate a little bit and say other than like
I design. Guess to be more specific, what's an example of a problem that you think can be solved by a competition, not a competition that is doing a good job of solving problems?
Sure, sure.
Like what's a Pullman issue that you think we can solve by putting it out to the fans?
Riverwalk, some sort of infrastructure to enhance people's ability to engage with the river. I think it's a unique geography. We often point to our geography as being a negative. Mm-hmm. I want to start flipping that and saying, hey, well,
I love our river.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, it's a unique thing. Not a lot of communities have a river going through it like San Antonio does, and its Riverwalk is phenomenal. Yeah. I love, you know.
Until it floods. It flooded like 2 weeks ago. But.
Well, and that's a thing too that Pullman's, we've got to deal with. Like Pullman's downtown is built in a floodplain. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be a perennial problem.
Sure.
So like, I like, you know, this is one of those tricky things where it was great to build the bridge the way we did.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it got wedged where it did.
Or fortunately.
Why fortunately?
So the reason it was designed the way it is because as a structure in a flood zone, it's actually illegal to put something because it could cause a debris dam.
Uh-huh.
Right. And so all of Pine Street Plaza is below the level of the flood zone. It's not legal to put a permanent bridge there. Mm-hmm. And so the solution is to put something that breaks away. It's either that or not a bridge at all. And some people said, well, why not have the bridge be higher? Simple. No one's going to use Pine Street Plaza if the whole thing's taken up with a giant ramp.
Yeah. No, sorry. I was saying what was unfortunate was just that it got wedged. Like what it was supposed to break away. And I think the design, I have no critique of the design. It was just that it got stuck. That's what's caused the long delay. We couldn't just swing it back into place as planned. So it was just a unfortunate thing that it did get wedged the way it did.
Yeah, that's one of those things that's really hard to test from an engineering standpoint without doing a bunch of simulations. And fake floods in downtown probably wouldn't be fun.
What I'm saying is not a criticism. I'm just, this is a...
Hey, no.
This is just the way it was.
Criticize away. It's just some people don't recognize it when it's a feature, not a bug.
Yeah, so what I'm trying to articulate is I think the bridge was designed appropriately. It is a feature that it's meant to swing away. It's too bad that it happened to get wedged this time. That's all.
Yeah, makes sense. So the things that you brought up are all fundamentally design issues. Mm-hmm. So like, are you suggesting we do a landscape architecture competition to redesign the Riverwalk?
Yeah, I think so. That's when I imagine it. And I'm glad you're bringing this out. Like that is mostly what I think about is our design challenges.
And do you think that solution would work better than like put an RFP out to bid?
Yes, but here's what I'm grappling with in this moment is yes, but we're relying on inexpensive labor. And is that a fair thing? So I like the idea of creating, you know, what I like about competitions is that you're in a sense, democratizing it, you're bringing more people into the mix, you're getting more conversations going, you're building more excitement. The downside is, are you paying a person fairly? And I think that there are ways to solve that problem though, potentially. And this is, I have not fully thought that out. It's like, could you do something where you, that you, just for entering, you get some sort of, reimbursement or something like that. I guess I still feel like it's solvable and that we can still utilize a competition.
And that's why we have competitive bidding, right? Mm-hmm. Like if you're going to put out an RFP for, say, a landscape firm to redesign a park, right? There's certain qualifications you have to meet ahead of time, right? You have to have a proof of portfolio and all that. Mm-hmm. And then you submit a bid based on criteria and that's a competitive process as the city picks one. So in a sense, we already have competitions as a way of solving problems.
Yeah.
It's just a little bit more formal with a higher barrier to entry.
No, I like the way you outline. I think that's a great point. I like your perspective on that.
Right on. Tell me a little bit about, on Facebook just today, you posted about the cost of elections. Mm-hmm. And I didn't quite understand what was going on there. I'm just going to read the caption.
Sure.
It said, in 2018, we were billed $30,000 for elections, and that price went to $190,000 in 2023. You attribute that to the mayor's budget proposal. What's that buying us when we can't get reliable election processes or information? What would you like to see improve there? Because I think we would all like to know that our elections are being run as efficiently as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know deeply why Whitman County has had these failures over the past 8 years, you know, where people aren't getting ballots. Like, you're disenfranchising voters. That's a huge problem.
I got the wrong ballot 1 year, I think two election cycles ago.
And so just most recently, Ben Emerson is a school board candidate. His information wasn't included in the pamphlet. And I talked to Ben, I was like, well, what happened there? He's like, well, I brought my, I didn't respond to the email, which was dated 2023, he said, you know. And so here's this. So he had submitted his paper, you know, paper voter pamphlet information.
Yeah.
The county says they never got it. So there was, that's a kind of an intake process failure, I guess, from what I know. That's how I would take it. Like, why isn't there some sort of stamping, inputting? But hey, maybe they've moved to all digital. It's like, well, if you're going to hold a candidate accountable to, you know, hey, you've got to turn this in via email. Well, then at least you got to get your date right on the email. That's a legal date. So technically we're all late in submitting our candidate information. If it says 2023, you can't assume that a candidate assumes that it's 2025, you know what I mean? Like, in a legal sense. So it seems to be process pieces that are making sure that we don't run into these errors.
Makes sense. So right now it's Tuesday, July 22nd. There's about to be a city council meeting tonight.
Yeah.
And within the last few days, you posted about fireworks.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not going to be so blunt as just ask you how you would vote about fireworks. Yeah. But I'm curious to know your thought process and how do you evaluate as a candidate what you feel is appropriate for council to pursue, and the way, like, what's the right way to navigate issues, hot button issues, like banning fireworks on College Hill?
Yeah, well, it's funny about it. It didn't feel like a hot button issue until he brought it up in the meeting. So my concern with it is just how it came about. So one, if this is a thing where you've heard from your constituents for a long time, and there's a wide body of your constituency that feels this way, then you start, that's where you start behind the scenes doing the homework. You start talking to folks, you talk to WSU, you learn more about the situation. If at that point you still feel like, hey, this is something that should be done, you come ready with, you know, that amendment that you want. And in this case, it would be a fairly simple one. It's just you put a line through the exemption for WSU. But you don't do that before gathering all the facts. So I think how it played out in the council meeting was, it just kind of felt like we kind of stumbled into it. Yeah. And it was like, well, what do we want to do? And like, Robert's Rules of Order is built, and the way Mayor Benjamin has outlined the meeting is, there's an opportunity to add something to a future agenda item. That's what should have happened here, is you don't just, hey, presentation on the fireworks, and now we're going to kind of stumble to this town hall meeting that maybe we're going to have when the students come back. It's like, no, come prepped. More importantly, though, is that it's not a big priority for the city. I don't think. That's not what I hear folks clamoring about, especially when you've got a ton of vacancies downtown and people are saying they are worried that we're losing a lot of businesses. And not that everything has to be the most important thing, but yeah, most of our time should be spent in council on high value strategic items. And so if you're going to want to do something with the fireworks, bring it into a bigger package. Or if you're going to pose the question, do it in terms of values. Do we as Pullman want to accommodate folks and just lean really hard into the welcoming thing to the point where we're not going to make people uncomfortable? And for those folks, that's a serious concern. Like, hey, I get if you've got PSD and those that percussive noise is going to set you off, I get that that is coming at unpredictable times as a problem. So can we mitigate that? But you can solve that stuff before you move to an amendment, I think. Or on the other hand, hey, we want to develop a better relationship with WSU. We want to increase the entertainment value of Pullman. Let's make fewer restrictions on fireworks in the city, but do it as part of a broader package, I guess. So I think there's a number of ways that could have gone better.
I appreciate that. I think you show a lot of restraint and maturity in what you just said. And nothing against Councilman Weller,
sure,
who I have great love for. He's a friend.
We're all gonna
step in stuff like that. But yeah, like what is actually the business that is worth our time right now? Like, is that really the most important thing facing our community? I also loved how you said it's important to make sure you gather all the information. You know, something, I'm just going to briefly loop this back to something you said earlier. We have had several high profile city staff departures, three in particular, each one of them separate, each one of them kind of related. Mm-hmm. And I've just seen so many people jump into assumptions, mm-hmm, and very few people stepping forward to say, hey guys, let's wait till we have all the facts. Mm-hmm. And so I just want to put that out there of like, you know, sometimes it's not a conspiracy. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's not incompetence. Sometimes it's just, hey, I don't really like Pullman and I want to move back to Las Vegas.
Yep.
Barb, sometimes it's just, hey, I had a weird relationship with someone and I can't be, you know, chief anymore. Like, just sometimes stuff happens.
Yep. And that's where I think transparency is so important. And in all cases, it's...
And in personnel issues, that's where you're least likely to see
that kind of... Because even if you get the person who's leaving, you know, because they're worried about job security, they're not going to give you the true reason. And it's just an unfortunate reality.
Or it's more complicated than what can be said in the moment.
Yes, right. Yeah, right. And then sometimes you start explaining a thing and then it just... Mm-hmm. It becomes less believable. It takes on a life of
its own. And the next thing you know, it's a trending topic on Nextdoor.
Yeah. And that's right. That comes back to, I think that's part of the climate we're in that we have to push back on. You know, I'm very much fight digital isolation. You know, what you mentioned, just kind of folks hopping on stuff right away. That's a product of this environment where we can hop online, say our two cents, face no accountability because we're in these echo chambers. But yeah, I think you're spot on with that. And I think that's true. You know, you'll hear it of businesses too. Oh, Pullman is losing all these businesses. What's going on? Arby's, you know, it's like, well, they couldn't afford the updates based on what the corporate specifications were. Foundry, hey, retirement time. Same thing with the Wagners. And
you try and run a building supply company the same year that Home Depot opens, mm-hmm, right? Like it's hard.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so what I think Pullman can do in those, we're in a tough spot being in, and this is, I'm saying this without any party, supporting any political belief here, but regardless of how you look at it for a business, if you're in Washington, which is well-regulated and with a high minimum wage, and a lot of folks choose to live in Washington because they support those things, but you've got Idaho on the other side, which far fewer regulations, much lower minimum wage. Just as a numbers game, it's tougher to run a business in Pullman. So what can we do creatively when there are things that are out of our control? We need to figure something out. And that's where I think that's where the idea of, you know, like competitions or potentially exploring a vacancy fee or penalty. And to be clear, that's not something I would support on a monthly basis, but I think it's abusive when it's like 5 years and like, dude, you're affecting the culture of Pullman or 20, exactly, or 25. Yeah. Like that's not right to me. That's like cultural strip mining. Like I don't think that's fair to the community. Like find a property
cultural
elsewhere.
Strip mining. I'm going
to
use that. That's good.
That popped into my head after the folks who bought the sports page, then changed it to the next page. Or no, this was after those folks bought it. They ended up selling all the memorabilia that was in there. And that's their right. You know, they're the property owner. They bought it. But it's kind of like, oh man, that's what made the sports page so cool, is you saw just decades worth of signed pictures and stuff. Like, and then now you're gone, you know, gone a few years later. So again, if that was
yours or I, small business, and we needed the cash, we might do the same thing.
Sure, but then they're gone and not part of the community.
Totally,
anymore, you know.
Totally. So, if fireworks is not the most important issue facing our town, what is? What do you feel like are the things right now that are holding Pullman back that you plan to tackle should you win the seat?
This is not exciting, but civic engagement. I think getting more, and by that, both in political terms, but connecting more community groups. We've got a lot of people and organizations doing really great work, but not aligned and moving in the same direction. So a quick example of that is like homelessness. So you take like, you got Family Promise of the Palouse, which is doing phenomenal work.
Great organization.
Yeah. They serve families for, let's say,
right.
So single dude, mm-hmm, homeless, who's helping them get back on their feet and get things going. There are
Sojourners Alliance, I think.
Yeah. So, and that's, you know, I've not met the gentleman. It's run by one guy. I think it's a pretty small organization.
The chapters in Moscow.
Okay, yeah. But you've got a number of groups, and I just spoke with Father Steve. He's the priest at Sacred Heart Church. That was the parish I grew up in. And he said, yeah, they've got a group that's bringing experts to speak. They're working on this issue, but what they're realizing is, hey, we need to start moving in the same direction. A lot of us are doing the same thing, or we're overlapping efforts, not as efficient as they could be, but that's what they're working toward. And I would like to help groups like that work toward efficiency, work toward collaboration.
Yeah.
Other ones that the public's brought up, business climate, how do we make it a more, how do we make Pullman a more business-friendly mm-hmm. community? Housing affordability has come up as a big one. Not as much, like almost 100% folks talk about businesses when I'm knocking on doors or when I'm counting folks. I don't know deeply the solutions there, but sounds like zoning, mixed use, and all those point back to give people flexibility and freedom to solve the problems.
Yeah.
Help them where you can, try and get out of their way. So limiting fees and regulations to where we can. Most of those, I think, are probably at the state level, and there's not much we can do about that. So are there ways that we can find exemptions for Pullman? Don't know yet, but that's where I think the solution is empowering people.
Yeah, awesome. Anything else you would like the community to know about your campaign?
Oh, man.
I can go to your website.
Yeah, I mean, that I want you involved, that if you've ever thought about serving an elected office, if you want to help and do something, to reach out, even at this point, and I've committed to, I've talked to several others who are running in Ward 3, Carl, Tawny, Shay, like, hey, let me know how I can help you. If you win this, what's something that we agree and align on that I can keep moving the work forward on?
That's cool.
And I would love for other people to do that too. Right now, go to my website, believeinpullman.com. John, I heard what you said. I would love to help out in this domain. What do I start doing? And that's, I'll start digging in, start asking questions of the city, of whoever it might be, who's involved, and get you plugged in. That's what I want, more people working together for the good of Pullman.
Love it. Well, speaking of believing in Pullman, what do you believe, or what do you hope Pullman looks like in 10, 15 years?
Yeah. I see the hill, and this is something that Francis had created this, or I shouldn't say created, but really worked hard to push this vision on the different hills, is kind of the block parties, is more people kind of leaning into the identity of their hill.
The hill parties. Those are fun.
But then also building in physical and social infrastructure. I don't know how possible this is, but I'd love to see a little, mini village, like a little bodega, next to a park, next to a kiosk with information about events that are happening. More people congregating, more people sharing their ideas, more people coming together. I would love to see more representation. So although we've got two city councilors per ward, what's stopping us from having smaller neighborhood, groups? I love what they're doing with the College Hill Association. Could we have associations for each of the hills that are just focusing on that identity, whether that's looking at the architecture, the events, things like that.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for sitting down with me. It's a pleasure to get to know you, and good luck in the primary election.
Thanks so much, Adam. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you and then to address your fans on the podcast.
Thanks so much.